Senate will come to order. Members, please vote to signify your presence.
The roll shows 20 members present.
Please stand for the invocation by the chaplain, Don Burrell.
How do I say goodbye to what we've had? The good times that made us laugh outweigh the bad. If we get to see tomorrow, I hope it's worth all the wait. It's so hard to say goodbye to yesterday.
Senator Stedman, would you please lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Briefities. Ready for certification this morning. That brings us to introduction of guests. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam President. I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread on the journal.
Without objection, the prayer will be spread on the journal. Senator Elton.
Thank you, Madam President. Under introduction of guests, we're fortunate today to have guest page. Quan Baird Clark is 10 years old. He goes to Glacier Valley School, which is one of our famous schools, winner of a national award for their arts and music program in the last year. He was born in Juneau, lives in Juneau, loves math and science, and he loves to be active and play in are great outdoors. If the body could welcome Quan to the chambers. And I should note that Quan's mother, Ronnie, has been with us the whole session. She is the one that modulates our voices for gavel to gavel. If the body could acknowledge her presence here today with her son. And finally, Madam President, sneaking into the back, they're still here. Sneaking into the back are Nico and Susie Buss. I think we all know Nico, have worked with him professionally for many, many years. He's now retired. And they're the parents of our page, Alita Buss. If the body could welcome them.
Senator Stedman.
Well, thank you, Madam President. With me today is a longtime personal friend of mine from Petersburg, Mr. John Jensen, if he can stand. And still a surviving Board of Fish member, and very proud of it, and looking forward to serving his next term. Thank you.
I say that John shared with me this morning that he was afraid his wife had called all of us and asked us to vote no on his appointment. So, are there further introductions this morning? Well, I'd like to take this time to introduce my husband, Curtis, who's here to help me pack up and leave once again. And as we all know, it's a special person who's the spouse or the loved one of a member. So for that, Curtis, I thank you. Messages from the governor.
There are no messages from the governor, Madam President.
Messages from the House.
Concur message dated April 12th, stating the House passed CS for Senate Bill number 221, Finance Amended, with the following amendments. House CS for Senate Bill number 221, Finance Amended, House Budget, Capital, Supplemental, and Other Appropriations, and it is returned for consideration.
Senator Ellis.
Good morning, Madam President. I move that the Senate concur in the House amendment to committee substitute for Senate Bill 221, Finance Amended, thus adopting House committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 221, Finance Amended, House, and I would recommend a yes vote on the motion to concur.
Is there debate? Senator Bundy.
Thank you. I'm going to steal a line from the senator who sits in front of me and to my left. I thought it most appropriate. He described this year's capital budget as large as Anchorage's phone book. However, most of the names in there are either Norwegian or Yupik.
Is there further debate? Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. I haven't had a chance to go over all the changes that are made in the House. I think I approve of most of what I understand. And what is particularly gratifying to me is to see that most of the amendments that we proposed here on the floor from our caucus have been included. And many of you in the majority here vote to approve this, I take that as a compliment and a sign of agreement that you finally, on some level, saw the logic and the benefit, the public policy of what we proposed here on the floor. And I find that as a high compliment, and I thank you.
Senator Boyer.
Thank you, Madam President. Well, on behalf of our Anchorage group, I want to say a particular thank you to the co-chairman of finance who put the capital budget together. We do not have a member from Anchorage on finance for the first time in many years. And at the outset of the year, the co-chairman agreed to work with us to make sure that the needs of our community were met, and he did. He honored his promise. There are much-needed roads, much-needed work in some of the schools in our districts that are aging, some well beyond 50 years old at this point, drainage and water safety projects. I pushed on him on the port right up to the end to try to get another full piece of money for our statewide port, but he was generous and fair throughout, and I'd like to say on behalf of Anchorage, thank you.
Is there further debate? Oh, Senator Kukesh.
Thank you. I just want to stand to defend myself. I didn't say that, and I heard it from somebody else, and I don't want the chairman of finance to be mad at me. I might have to work with him in the future, and I don't want him to be thinking it. But I did want to compliment the two chairmen of finance. I thought they did an excellent job. They worked really hard, and I was, like the prior speaker, I pushed to the last day to get a little bit more money into something that didn't work, but it wasn't their fault, and I really appreciate them. And on behalf of my district and the districts that I represent in Alaska, thank you very much for the work.
Thank you. Is there further debate?
Morning, Madam President. If I could, a few comments, somewhat random but pertinent. We've done some work over the interim on capital budget process to try to bring a better way to do it. And I just wanted to share with you folks just one thing this morning. When we did our work with NCSL over the interim, we have a 100-plus page report on how they do it in other states. And suffice it to say, we are only one of a handful, I think it's five, a handful of states that have any sort of a capital budget that's outside the agencies. So if you think that everybody else does it like we do it, we are completely outside the norm for the rest of America. So I'll just leave that with you. We should, as we march forward, as I've spoken before, remember that we have not only general funds but Alaska funds, and we've been tracking that. And I just want you to know, when you look at the capital budget, that we're spending, and I don't have it updated for what we have here today, but as of version T, we're spending $1.22 billion in good old general funds. And then you have to add to that $427 million in other funds, which are essentially general funds. So when you see the people's money and what's in our checkbook for what amounts to discretionary income, this budget contains $1.648 billion in Alaska's funds. These charts, of course, are available should one want one. So I look back just to see how that compared. I look back to FY04. I was involved in that. We had records. FY04, we had a, this is general fund now, this isn't capital funds, Alaska funds. FY04, we had a capital budget of $90 million, and that was essentially every budget back to FY95 was just hovered around $100 million. The capital budget in FY07 was almost $1,968 million. When we finish up here, FY08 capital budget with everything included is going to be $1.366 billion, and FY09 is going to be about $600 billion. So yeah, we live in extraordinary times with extraordinary
Senator,
revenues,
Senator
and it's
Wilson,
helpful to look back. Yes.
Would that be $600 billion?
Did I say $600 million? Yeah. We get throw those numbers around, $600 million. Yeah. So it's just the differences. Just in a few years, we just have to remember that as we march forward. I'm going to continue to vote against the budget for two reasons. We've talked about the spread and throughout the budget. The highs and the lows are multiples of somewhere between 6 and 15. So that's, I don't mind my community being pushed away from the trough, but you ought to be able to at least touch it. So I'm a little concerned about that, and so I think that the balance is out of whack. And the other is we're going to spend the $2.9 billion, almost $3 billion in this capital budget. And somewhere in our whole process, we haven't taken the time or even had the gumption, the courage to sit at a committee table and talk about helping people trying to meet their electric and fuel bills. That's if that's not an open wound on our legislature, it's certainly a bad bruise. And so I'm sorry about that. You can rewind the tape. I've been public about that. So with that, Madam President, thank you for your comments, and I would encourage a no vote.
Thank you. Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Madam President.
When we look at this capital budget, we need to take into account times aren't like they were 5 or 6 years ago. And you could look at capital items total when we add in federal funds and all of state funds and in the 09 money of pushing $3 billion. And some may find that ghastly. We've got $315 million in bonds, $888 million in operating, and $2.7 billion in capital. When you take a little broader look at what's going on, and you boil it down to the general funds and what have been referenced on the floor, other state funds, sometimes they're referred to on the floor as flex funds, but either, no matter how you define it, it's state money and it's state spending. $927 million, which then when we add in the $3.1 million in bonds, we have to stop and take a look at what we're doing on our savings account. We've already put away $1 billion in 09. We have roughly $1.3 billion still on the table, $1.2 depending on how you want to work the math. But if the economy stays relatively constant from here going forward, till next year, we're going to be having a discussion on the floor of what do we do with the extra billion, what do we do with the extra $2 billion above what we're spending on capital. And hopefully the body will continue to put savings first. Hopefully we'll be putting those monies into the CBR or other savings mechanisms for the day when revenue shortfalls do appear in front of us, and we all know those days will come sooner or later. They always do. But if you take out the bonds, which are $315 million, we're still sitting at around $2 in savings for every dollar in spending. If you add them in, we're a little under that. But there's revenue that is not reflected in the 09 estimate, because as we all know, we try to estimate revenue conservatively so we don't get caught in a shortfall. We also take a look at what's required by the Constitution that we've all sworn to uphold. We're somewhere down around 22-23% on the spending after the surplus after operating has spent on capital, and we're supposed to be at around 33, so we're somewhere in the low 20s. And I think we'd all agree that this is a reasonable capital budget to push the state through this economic slowdown that's hitting across the southern 48, and it's going to ripple north and affect us, and hopefully these projects are going to be in play during that time, so we'll just have a smooth ride through the economic hiccup. We'll take this extra funds instead of following our constitutional mandate and spending 33%, keep it in the low 20 range, and put that money into savings. I think the people feel that's a responsible way of handling the state's finances. And when we look back in time, this is for inflation. This is somewhere around the eighth, maybe the seventh largest capital budget dealing with the general funds. So once we go back and we take a look at the spending of the capital budgets that were back in the oil boom days of the early 80s, they were large and there was very little savings. We have that reverse now. We're pushing savings first, we spend second, and with that, Madam President, I urge your support.
Madam President, point of information. And I appreciate those comments, but I just want to make sure that the record's clear, and I think the co-chair I know will agree, that when he says we've saved $2 for every one we spent, that's correct if you're taking savings to capital. But if you're taking savings to the total budget, for every dollar we've spent, we've saved one. And I believe that's correct. Thank you.
It's approved. Senator Tyson.
Yeah, thank you, Madam President. I found myself startled here when I heard the comment from my delightful colleague from South Anchorage that Anchorage wasn't represented on the at the finance chair, and I thought, wait a minute, that's wrong. Eagle River and Chugiak are still a part of the municipality of Anchorage, and that's factually incorrect. And I thought, well, maybe she's heard me talking about the Great Divorce and that maybe Chugiak and Eagle River ought to be separate, be the second largest city in the... Then I thought, no, she's profoundly right. Anchorage had no voice at that table. There was not, except for a couple minor things, there was not a single suggestion that I made for on behalf of the nearly half of the people of Alaska that had any effect in the Finance Committee. And so my friend was, on a deeper level, profoundly correct. And indeed, the capital budget that... But one area that my friend was wrong is that I don't think that Anchorage was and its constituents were fairly treated in the capital budget at all. And much of what we see in the budget before us is the result of what the governor has done and what the House did to restore the package, the pieces that were cut out in Senate finance. Before this process started, I asked that we all adopt some kind of an objective criteria for weighting and judging capital projects, and that has been ignored. And as I've often said, having raised a lot of teenagers, I'm used to being ignored. But in that, I said, if we're not going to have a criteria, an objective one, then we at least the default ought to be per capita. And of course, the budget that came out of Senate Finance on the capital side saw Anchorage getting one-third, one-fourth as much as some of the other districts. And it seemed to me that that failed any test of fairness. Thank you.
Is there further debate? Senatorial.
Madam President, just to correct the tall senator from Fairbanks, I think when you add it all up, it's for every $2 that we spent, we have saved one. So I think he misspoke there, and certainly not intentionally. I will be a no vote today, and I ask the members of the majority, when was it that you got together and discussed spending $1.6 billion of general fund or state other fund on the capital budget? And if you never had that conversation, why? We would have hoped, and of course we've been advocating for more savings and try to keep a lid on spending this year. And in fact, when we offered amendments to the capital budget, we tried as best we could to have offsets. And if we had been successful on any of our amendments and used up the pot of money that we thought should be shifted, we would have stopped offering amendments because we didn't have a further offset. But none of them passed, of course. You would hope that as you go to the co-chair or go to caucus to advocate for a project in your district, there's a little bit of debate about, well, where does that fit into the overall scheme of things? And if that project gets put in, what has to fall by the wayside? But if that discussion never takes place and it's just, well, we'll add some more money. That was a fear that we raised in some of our press availabilities early, that accommodation, or to get to that accommodation, we would just add money. And of course, you know, here we are at $1.6 billion. My suspicion is that there was never any discussion, there was never any agreement, there was never any buy-in to where we would bring total capital spending in this year. It was just whatever it took to get along. We would just add to it. So I have heard over the past couple of weeks, well, we'll rely on the third branch of government, the executive, to bring things back in line with regards to the total spend, and we'll rely on that other branch of government to use their power to bring regional balance to the budget. You know, it's terribly disappointing to me that I hear those words come out of majority members' mouths, that we would not feel comfortable enough with the product that we pass out of this body, our branch of government, and we would rely on another one to bring the total spend under control and bring balance to the total distribution of the funds. The co-chair of finance talked about this. Well, if you adjust for inflation, this is the seventh or eighth biggest. And in the early 80s, certainly there were some large capital budgets. But as we have said, that was as Prudhoe Bay was just kicking into stride. We were pumping 2 million barrels a day, and we were going to be pumping 2 million barrels a day for the foreseeable future. And Prudhoe Bay had an estimated additional 25 to 30 years of life. Of course, now it's a world of difference as those fields continue to decline, and we have to rely more and more on smaller satellite fields to try and stem the reduction. So we're not looking forward to the heyday any longer. So that would beg, I think, to be more prudent with our money. We've set aside certainly a sizable amount in fiscal year 2008 and fiscal year 2009. We had hoped there would have been more set aside, either outright set aside in savings, or any dollar you didn't spend is a dollar that's saved. It's not consumed this year, so it's carried forward for future use. That could be next year or a year into the future. But to pat ourselves on the back and say, well, compared to the early 80s, when there was a year that they made a deposit of $1.8 billion into the permanent fund, so yeah, they were spending lots, and they had this huge wave of cash stretching out in front of them. They were spending plenty, but they also saved a huge chunk then too, because spend as they would, they couldn't consume it all in 1 or 2 years. But to say that, well, compared to the early 80s, you know, we're looking pretty good. It's a world of difference than the 80s. Co-chair also mentioned the economy. And of course, the economy is one of the things that we're concerned about, not only the U.S. economy, but the world economy. That's something that we absolutely can't control. And if the world economy does slow the price of the commodity that we sell to run our state economy, our state government, is out of our control. The amount that we produce on a yearly basis is largely outside of our control, and the price that we get is outside of our control. So to take a deep breath and hope for the best, that the economy won't slow the economy worldwide, I think is folly. We should have set more money aside. We should have had an agreement amongst ourselves, an agreement between ourselves and the House on where we would bring total spending in. We should not have just relied on, don't worry, there's plenty of cash. Whatever it takes to get along, we'll spend it. And after we're gone, we'll rely on another branch of government to bring some reason to the document. Thank you.
Is there further debate? Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Madam President. The area that you and I represent, and myself a little further into Chugiak, the other day I said Yahoo Matsu, because that's the slogan of our travel and our industry when it comes to tourists. That's been very successful. And as I look at the dollars that are in the budget that affect the areas that I represent, I'm proud of it. And let me just put it this way. Sioux Valley High School is $19 million, a few dollars over that. It burned down. Those young people are living and working out of a senior center and some portables. And this body, thank you very much, supported funding to get those kids back into a better environment. Roads. Our community has 2 four-lane roads. One's called the Glen Highway, one's called the Parks Highway. We have highway safety quarters, however. Our people are getting killed and maimed on those roads. This budget has items to abate that, because we don't have adequate road structure in our area. It has dollars for substandard bridges, multiple bridges, because it's not, are they dangerous to drive over? You can't drive over them because they're either gone or they've been depleted to the point they're not functional. They're closed. This budget addresses that. You go to the school sites. There's money in here for technology and books to aid our children. There's money for our senior citizens, which is an important piece of our society that we have to take care of. There's a statewide aspect in here that affects some of my constituents and yours too, Madam President. That's South Denali Visitor Center, which is the most visited place in the state, as I understand it. And it expands that. It expands the potential income to the state brought to us by those seniors. And finally, probably the largest of the potential for statewide projects in our area is a rail spur. The rail spur that will bring natural resources from the interior, from my good friends, the two senators from Fairbanks, the senator from North Pole. It allows their constituents that are out there doing whatever they're doing to extract natural resources to put them on a train and move them down to a port expeditiously, most important, economically, statewide. I'm proud of that. I voted for that, and I'll vote for it again because it's important. And, you know, I don't know all the projects that are in this budget. I know that the ones that affect my constituents, I can defend every one of them, and I'm proud of that. But I am ashamed of the fact that we're having our people that are being maimed and killed on our roads. We only have 2 four-lane roads, and they're the major state arteries. And I'm going to do something about that. This budget does that, and I say thank you very much for Matt Sue.
Is there further debate? And the question is, shall the Senate concur in the House amendment to committee substitute for Senate Bill 221, Finance Amended? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does anyone wish to change your vote? Secretary will record the vote and tally the vote.
15 yeas, 5 nays.
And so the Senate has concurred in the House amendment to CS for Senate Bill 221, Finance Amended.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on concurrence be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clauses.
And without objection, the roll call vote on concurrence will be considered the vote on the effective date clauses.
Madam President, I move the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund section.
The question, is there a debate? The question is, shall the Senate adopt the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund section? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Secretary will record the vote. Oh, does anyone wish to change your vote? Secretary will record the vote and tally the vote.
15 yeas, 5 nays.
And so the Senate has adopted the Constitutional Budget Reserve section.
Concur message dated April 13th stating the House passed Senate Bill number 254, an act extending the termination date of the Alaska Regional Economic Assistance Program and providing for an effective date, with the following amendments. House CS for Senate Bill number 254, Finance, effective date amended. House, an act extending the termination date of the Alaska Regional Economic Assistance Program, extending the termination date for the authority of the Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission to maintain a vessel-based limited entry fisheries system for the weather vane scallop and Bering Sea hair crab fisheries, providing for an effective date by amending the effective date under Section 28, Chapter 137, SLA 2002, and providing for an effective date. Title Change Resolution, HCR 30, and it is returned for consideration.
Mr. DeBate.
Madam President, I move that the Senate concur in the House amendment to Senate Bill 254, thus adopting House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 254, Finance, effective date amended House. And this is a subject regarding hair crabs, and other folks know much more about this than I do. I will recommend a yes vote and ask others to explain if necessary.
Thank you. Mr. DeBate. Is there a debate?
Madam President.
Oh, Senator Stevens.
I can't see you through the flowers
yes,
there.
Yes.
Well, Madam President, I think that this is, well, first, the bill that we sent, Madam President, 254, to the other body, was a very good bill having to do with the arters, and I certainly supported that. Unfortunately, in the other body, they added sort of a poison pill, at least in my way of thinking, by adding in the weather vane scallop and Bering Sea hair crab fisheries. The issue for me, Madam President, is really when it comes to fisheries, in my 8 years here in the legislature, there have been two principles that have guided me. And they both, one, the first one is Alaskans should benefit from Alaskan fisheries, and the second is that Alaskans should get all the jobs available for their youth in the fisheries. And I'd just like to expand on that just momentarily. Alaskans do need to benefit. They do need to, as much as possible, if the ownership is transferred to individuals, they need to be the ones who own that fishery, not outsiders, not people who live in Palm Springs or in Seattle. It should be Alaskans. We are the ones who should benefit. Think of it the way we do, the way we treat oil and gas. We like to think that, and in fact, this body has come up very, very clearly saying that, that there should be in-state use of gas. As much as possible, Alaskans should benefit from that natural resource, just as we should benefit in the fisheries area from that resource. The second issue is jobs for Alaska youth. I want to be able to say to the young people in Kodiak, young men and women that want to go into the fishing industry, that there are jobs available. And just as we do in oil and gas, we want to make sure that Alaskans are hired. We have preferential treatment for Alaskans. So, Madam President, I think this is the poison pill. I would certainly urge people not to concur. And maybe just to add to this, I'd move and ask unanimous consent that the concur message on SB 254 be referred to the Rules Committee. We have a bill in Rules SB 251. These are both similar bills, and they should both rest in peace in the Rules Committee.
Mm-hmm. We have a motion on the floor.
And I will withdraw that motion.
But thank you very much. Is there further debate? Senator.
And Madam President, on further reflection, I will withdraw my recommendation for a yes vote on concurrence.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam President. I just want to go ahead and rise and talk about show the other side of the issue that's being presented. As a previous speaker, the senator from Kodiak talked about Alaskans should benefit from the natural resources that are out there, and I totally agree with that. My family has been up here for generations. Obviously, part of my family came on over and have been involved with the reindeer industry and others. But people that I represent certainly are going to be have been benefiting under the CDQ program. And that's what this kind of boils down to, the CDQ program. And those CDQs that have been involved and have purchased permits that are out there for both the weather vane scallop as well as the Bering Sea hair crab fisheries, those people are the ones that are affected. Those people are the ones that are going to benefit by extending this bill, or by extending, by the amendment that was put on over on the House side. You've got three senators that are down here that are with constituents that are affected by this. And so to say that they're not going to benefit, I think, is a little bit of a stretch. Sure, they contract with larger boats for more efficiency to harvest these resources that are out there. Sure, these boats come from outside of the state, but the benefit, the monetary benefit that goes with this comes to those three senators that represent CDQs as well as IFQs that are out there. And with that, I certainly want to commend this concurrence. Actually came with a fair amount of discussion with House members over on the other side. I'm sorry, with members of the other body, and we came to a concurrence on the amendment. There was compromise on both sides, and with that, I certainly want to go ahead and advocate for a concurrence with the House.
Senator Stedman.
Can we have a brief, Eddie?
Senate will come back to order. Is there further debate? Senator Wagner.
Thank you, Madam President. I'm one of the few people in this room who's owned a boat, and that statement goes to the senator from Gulliver's statement about people from out of state that own boats and the amount of effort put in on these fisheries. We're going to see more and more consolidation of the ability of fishermen to make a living and produce the fish in our fisheries because of the sheer cost of energy and cost of doing business. Now, I'm going to vote for this concurrence. However, I want to remind the body of one thing. We've had two or three votes on the floor here in the last couple of days about pulling a bill out of a committee. This concurrence vote is the direct result of that exact thing happening in the other body, where a bill was pulled out of a committee by the other body because the chairman would not release the bill. So when you vote in favor of this concurrence, please keep that in mind. Thank you.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Madam President. I'll be speaking in favor of this. I think the circumstances regarding that are a little bit unique, and I'm not going to get into that issue, but this bill represents a fairly big compromise in that initially the legislation required that the provisions of the legislation regarding these species was unlimited. And this particular compromise extends the program for 5 years. And the people that are benefiting from this, these provisions, are some of the poorest areas of the state. So I'd encourage people to vote yes.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Madam President. When I was a freshman back in 2001 in the other body, the gentleman who happened to, I had the good fortune of sitting right in front of, Drew Scalzi was his name, representative out of Homer, and he was in my class. There were 11 of us in our class, and we got real close. And my vote is in honor of his name today. He's since passed and is in heaven. He died of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma a couple of years ago, way too young. Left behind a beautiful daughter and son and a family and many, many more years of public service that he would have given. But this was his bill. The sunset is extending today, and to be frank, Madam President, I was from South Anchorage, still am, and didn't know a thing about a hairy crab or a slippery scallop, didn't care how they were managed, but he spent a lot of time bending my ear about the need to carefully manage the fisheries in Alaska so that we don't deplete our resources for the future. And I was convinced then, and I'm convinced now, and I'm a yes vote in honor of Drew today.
Is there further debate? Brief these. The Senate will come back to order. Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam President. And in wrap up, I just want to go ahead and say that voting yes to concur with the House on this especially important issue is going to do a couple things. Not just benefit the people that we've talked about, those people that have been dependent on this over the years, but it also makes it easier for the department to go ahead and continue on with the management system that's been in place for the last 4 years, they don't have to go ahead and develop a new management system, especially one that's going to be divided because many of the scallop beds are bisected by the fishery. So you got federal waters on one side, you got state waters on the other, you got two separate management systems, and certainly would be difficult to go ahead and decide how you're going to be managing your fisheries in those two waters. And open unlimited access would be difficult and expensive for Fish and Wildlife Office to go ahead and enforce. And with that, I go ahead and strongly urge a yes vote on this concurrence.
Is there further debate? There being no further debate, shall the Senate concur in the House Amendment to Senate Bill 254? Members may proceed to vote. Secretary will lock the roll. Does anyone wish to change your vote? Secretary will record the vote and tally the vote.
18 yeas, 2 nays.
And so the Senate has concurred in the House Amendment to Senate Bill 254.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call vote on concurrence on the bill be considered the roll call vote in the effective date clause.
Without objection, the roll call vote on concurrence will be considered the vote in the effective dates clause.
Madam President, a title change is necessary, so at this time I move that House Concurrent Resolution Number 30 be taken from the Senate Secretary's desk.
Is there a debate on Senate Concurrent Resolution 30? If not, shall the Senate pass House Concurrent Resolution 30? Members may proceed to vote. Senator Dyson? Secretary will lock the roll. Does anyone wish to change your vote? Secretary will record the vote and tally the vote.
18 yeas, 2 nays.
And so HCR 30 has passed the Senate. Briefities. I'm really waiting to see if the House sends us anything else on which we need to concur. I think they have sent the last document to us, but we will hold on until they adjourn, Sunny Guy. We are under...
Those are all the messages from the House, Madam President.
Okay, and as I understand everything, it takes us down to the daily calendar and citations.
Citations. Honoring the Senate Secretary, Senate Secretary's Assistants, Senate Records. Honoring Senate Sergeant-at-Arms, Senate Assistant Sergeant-at-Arms, Senate Pages. Honoring Legislative Lounge Staff. In Memoriam, John Patrick Shields.
Madam President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the citations on today's calendar be adopted.
Do you object, Senator Shields?
Madam President, I do object, just to offer a brief comment on Harry Crabb and... No. I just wanted to take a moment while we are all here to express the appreciation I know we all have for the patience, good humor, and professionalism of the staff that we have working with us this year. Congratulations and thank you goes to Senate Secretary Kirsten Wade, Liz Clark, Susie Gregg Fowler, Martha Hobson, Nancy Schaufelberger, Juliana Singh, Gina Spartz, and Senate Record Supervisor Ann Krokenberg, and staff Carrie Cooperreiter, Leah Gladstone, Vicki McGuire, Nancy Vital, and Susan Warner. I apologize if I made a mess out of any of those names. And also then to our erstwhile Sergeant-at-Arms, who's done such a tremendous job here, Gary Stambaugh, as well as the Assistant Sergeant-at-Arms, Katie Smith, and our pages, Alita Buss, Lauren Brooks, Jeff Fanning, Jake Krusenstein, Stephanie Orzi, and April Shoemaker, and finally to our wonderful lounge staff for all the great job they've done this entire year, Melissa Conderman, Stephanie Marmon, Amanda Bergman, Stuart Ely, and Stosh Siegelman for all the patience that they've had with us. Great thanks to all of them. Please join me in a round of applause.
So, yes.
Madam President, the members do have on their desks some special order citations, so I move and ask unanimous consent that we take these citations up as a special order of business.
These citations are before us.
Madam President, I move this adoption of the citations.
Without objection, the citations under special order of business are taken up at this time, are approved.
And Madam President, there's a third set of citations, the stragglers, we call them. Members have those on their desk, so I move that we take up the two-page special order of business Senate citation calendar.
It is before us.
I move the Senate citation calendar as a special order of business.
And the Senate citations under special order of business come before us and are adopted. That takes us to unfinished business. Announcements. Special orders.
Madam President.
Senator Stevens.
I move and ask your absence to speak on leadership.
On leadership, Senator Stevens.
Madam President, I want to thank you for all you have done to us.
Yeah. Yeah.
For us. Under your leadership, it's been absolutely outstanding these past 2 years. The 25th legislature, when you think about it, this is the 50th year of the Alaska State Legislature. It's been enormously successful due to your patience and good humor and your dedication. We've certainly all gotten to know your facial expressions. I have, certainly. When you enthusiastically support what I am saying or doing, I can read your face and I know that it's there. I also know at times when you are not all amused with what I'm saying. And I have a very clear indication when you would just like to tweak our little heads off. You made that clear too. It truly has been a pleasure working with you, Madam President. Under your leadership, you've moved the state forward in many areas: education, PERS, TERS, solution, revenue sharing, savings. We look forward to the future, knowing you are not retiring, but only ending this 2-year period as your Senate President. We want to thank you for all you have done. And finally, I have asked the Sergeant-at-Arms to pass on a small token of our appreciation for the many things you have done for us. Thank you, Madam President.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you. Am I to open this now, or later? While I do this, I will take the privilege under special orders as well, with permission from all of you, to speak on thanks. It has been an incredible experience for me. I know that going in, not everyone had that same opinion, but I hope through the 2 years we worked out some of those awkward moments. And when people contact me and complain about what is the legislature doing, my response is always, this is a group of 20 people who arrives early and stays late and dedicates themselves to the work of the state, and particularly to their district. And I have absolutely no hesitation in saying that, and want to thank each of you in your roles as chairs, as co-chairs, as committee chairman, as special task force members, and all the things that have gone so exceedingly well these last 2 years. And I hope that in your memory book, you can look back on these 2 years as not only tolerable but successful, because it's this legislature, including the House, that has earlier than ever, more efficiently than ever, and in ways that I never conceived, worked together and provided funding for education and all the other various things. We've addressed energy. We've addressed homelessness. We have, on the public safety, we have an omnibus crime bill. We have some things we can go home and tell our And I ask that you do that, and in your mission, please be sure you take the credit for all that we've done. Thank you very much.
Yes. There is a continuation of this recognition of your leadership and service, and I'm going to ask the privilege of the floor to step forward while we're still in order. All members of this body have joined together and signed the presentation we're about to make. So Senator Stevens would join me here, and we'll come forward with this additional presentation and then ask all members who choose to come forward for the photograph.
Thank you. Thank you. Oh, my goodness. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Very nice. That will be a wonderful memory.
Madam President, could I move that we stand at ease for the purpose of...
We will stand at ease.
It's great.
No respect. It's all over. Senator Ellis, can we have the message passed on to our youngest member?
We do.
We are on the record. Preparing to... Brief it ease. Come back to orders. We're still under special orders. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Madam President. Permission to speak on the subject of crime package.
on the subject of crime package, Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Madam President. And yesterday, when we got the concurrence back on our omnibus crime package, I didn't want to take up time from the body at that point because we still had some movement that was very important. But I just wanted to take a few minutes, and I have a package for each member so that they can work through it, put it in their newsletters, and talk about it in their communities when they go back home. But the Senate Bill 265 that we got back actually became our omnibus crime package. We worked with members of the other body. We worked with people on both sides of the aisle. We even worked with our governor's branch. And I think that's a real success for all of us. We tried to tackle issues from the North Slope all the way down to Southeast and, of course, in through our urban areas. Starting in our urban areas, we have created a solution to some of the property crimes that are rampant, and that is in the subject of creating a reporting for pawn shops. We talked about this in the Senate Judiciary Committee, many meaningful, valuable things that are stolen, and you've got families and people trying to track down pawn shop in these urban areas as quickly as they can, their personal property, and this bill would allow for electronic records to be kept of those. We go all the way up to some of our rural areas, and we involve the rural members of this body and the other body to tackle the issue of bootlegging and dry communities and damp communities. And I know you know, Madam President, these are communities that have spoken themselves. This is their option to choose whether they would like to be dry or damp, with some alcohol or without any. And there are still people bringing alcohol into these communities, and they're doing it illegally. And we have, for the first time, put criminal penalties into place. And we've made them going all the way up to Class C felonies. And we have said that there will be substantial fines that are associated with each time that you fail. There was much debate in the other body's finance committee, with me at the center of it, about whether these penalties should be stronger. And I believe that there will be a movement to make those penalties stronger, to deter those that would profit substantially by bringing this alcohol into communities that have said no, that this is a problem for our community. So, but this is a start. It has a 15-year look back so that you cannot have committed that offense within 15 years. We target the issue of sexual offenders, and we have a database, as you know, Madam President, of those that have been convicted of sexual offenses. We have gone through all of the court rulings on it, and this state has one that's at the forefront. Unfortunately, we have between 10% and 11% of those sexual offenders convicted that refuse to comply with the database. They refuse to do it, and we try to get at them through a couple of different methods. The member in front of me has a bill trying to get their email addresses so that we can see where they are and where they're going. In this particular bill, what we try to do is we compare when they apply for a permanent fund dividend, we go immediately to those out of compliance, and we withhold their dividend. And as you know, Madam President, sometimes taking people's money is what you can do to get their attention and get them to comply. If they don't comply, and if it isn't already obligated to a child that they have, then we will put it into the Violent Crimes Compensation Fund, and we will give it to victims of crime. So we hope that that gets their attention. The other thing that we did, I'm most proud, and this is something that many members, including you, Madam President, were very touched by the Flint Waters investigation. Members of the Department of Public Safety here in our state, on the municipal level and on the federal level, have been working from dawn until dusk, trying to track down folks who are sexually abusing, raping our children online, on the internet. And we saw a presentation a couple of months ago that made us physically ill, that made many of us move to tears, when they talked about the average age of these victims going down to as young as 2, and they are happening online in real time. And the gentleman who spoke, the investigator here, divides his time between property crimes and this, and he said every night he goes home with a stack of leads about this big, and he knows that his work is not done. And so in this bill, and with the help and the support of the co-chairman of finance, we added an investigator for that unit whose specialty and training will be specifically in child pornography. We also added a special prosecutor, someone who can run alongside, learn how to preserve evidence, learn how to not run afoul of all the search and seizure requirements that our Constitution has so that we can nab these guys and make Alaska one of the last places that a sex offender would ever want to come and hurt our children. And with that, I will wrap up, Madam President, and just say there are a lot of great things in this crime package, about 32 sections, and I appreciate all the support that everyone here in this body gave me. Thank
you. Are there further special orders? Senator Terrio.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. If I could have the leader of the body to speak about relationships.
On relationships, Senator Terrio.
I want to start off, first of all, by declaring that I continue to think that the Judiciary Committee, as it has been for the past 4 years, or actually 6 years now that we've completed these two, I think it's the best committee in the body. It was under Senator Seekins. I thought that we had a good working relationship that didn't mean that the tussle and push and shove sometimes between majority and minority wasn't evident, but I thought that under Senator Seekins, we did good work, put out good work product, and I appreciate under the current chairman that continued. He was a member of the committee previously. I enjoyed working with him, and again, although there were some certain policy debates that we just couldn't move from our respective corners, I think by and large the Judiciary Committee continued to be a very thoughtful thoughtful body and put out a good product this year. I appreciated continuing on that committee. Between myself and the Majority Leader, we have known each other for a long time, and I appreciate the relationship that we have continued on a daily basis. I would come in and we would talk before the floor session started about what little skirmishes on a daily basis we could just avoid, agree to, and accommodate each other, majority and minority, as we went through and held some stuff in second reading or reconsidered things, and that worked out, I think, to the benefit of the body. And Madam Speaker, I have appreciated the times that we have been able to get together and discuss how we interact with each other. There, of course, has been tension between us, again, majority to minority, but we have had a number of conversations, usually below the radar, just to see where we could search out the common ground. So I have appreciated those opportunities to have that conversation. So no matter what, after 2 years, the relationships continue, and I look forward to, because I'm not up for election, I look forward to being back and continuing for another 2 years with relationships that have been established.
Thank you, Senatorio. Are there further special orders? Senator Dyson.
Yeah, thank you. I will say this awkwardly. Permission to speak on mea culpa,
On mea culpa, Senator Dyson.
And thank you, and the abortion issue. I'll try to not be offensive. I want to thank you for what you've done for my own personal development. I had significant reservations about the organization you put together, but I have to say, in all fairness, that although there was parts of the process that I thought were suboptimal, it's produced some darn good results. And I say that grudgingly, but honestly, and I appreciate it. On a personal level, being in the minority has been an eye-opening experience for me. I've had a lot of opportunity, particularly this spring, to deal with anger management, resentment, stomping around in my own self-righteousness. And there's an old expression that says, when you point the finger, there's generally three fingers pointing back at you, and there's the biblical parable about beaming your own eye when you're trying to get the sliver out of somebody else's eye. Everything I've been critical about, angry about, and resentful are things that I've been guilty of. And getting my nose rubbed in that and has been a really healthy process for me, although darn uncomfortable. And I apologize for times in the past when I have been calloused and inconsiderate of what was going on with minority members and their frustration. And I have a brand new sensitivity to that. And I, on some level, have appreciated that learning experience. And it has caused me to look at a lot of garbage pits in my own life that were not at all comfortable. On the issue of abortion, I know it's an uncomfortable one for everybody on every side of the issue. A couple of points that we never got a chance to have a discussion on in this body. One of them is parental consent. I have my own prejudices, and my prejudice, and I think they're based on a lot of life experiences, is that most of the ugly problems in life are caused by men. Now, my wife and my daughters are trying to disabuse me of that prejudice and say that women can be evil, manipulatory, selfish, and insensitive. That's not my experience. But what by not passing the parental consent, we have robbed quite a few young women of the comfort and help they could have gotten from their parents when they are pressured by an exploitive, insensitive boyfriend who's gotten them pregnant and then either abandoned them or is pressuring them to, quote, get rid of the problem by having an abortion. And kids need the wisdom and the experience and the maturity of their parents. And Carpinetti said it very well. For all the traditions in Western law, and in the U.S. and Alaska, we have this tradition of protecting children against their own immaturity. And I thought he said it eloquently. And that's why we have restrictions on driving, drinking, tobacco, all kinds of other medical procedures, even for field trips in school. And we have carved out this bit of law that says that if it has to do with reproductive freedom, somehow or the other, parents can be bypassed. And allowing those who exploit our young women to be able to bypass the parents, I think, is an unwise decision. The bill that we had a chance to entertain was very carefully crafted and had four immediate exceptions. If a young woman is emancipated, if she's married, she's in the military, or if a family adult and somebody from a responsible government institution like a CASA, Child Protective Services person, if they will sign that this kid is mature enough to make that decision, they're home and free to do whatever they want with their unborn child. There's also a streamlined judicial bypass that was quite a bit more accessible to that young woman in that situation. We chose, for whatever reason, to not allow that child under duress to have access to their parents or some adult help in that situation. I think that's an issue that we will revisit. I'm sorry for that we didn't get a chance to debate it. I realize that the bill coming over from the other side was very late in the process, and I'm sure that that contributed to the fact that we didn't get a chance. But we had parallel bills here that we could have dealt with a long time ago. I hope we come back in another situation and look at it. The partial birth abortion, I'm going to speak about it plainly, and I hope that it gets your attention. But it's uncomfortable. This is a rarely used procedure. As I understand it, last year only two times in Alaska, according to the records we have, which I'm sure are incomplete. But it is when you have a late-term abortion and the mother has decided that having a live-born child is a very uncomfortable situation. We've had significant problems in this country with what do you do with a child that survives the abortion process. And there's horror stories about them being set aside in cloak rooms or under a pile of towels while they die, and so people won't hear them cry. But the child surviving an abortion is a real problem, legally, morally, and for the medical community. So the problem with a late-term abortion is that the traditional way of doing abortion in second trimester and later is you use a suction curette, and I can get you pictures if you want, but it's like a small vacuum cleaner with serrated edges, and you go in there and cut the kid apart and suck out the pieces. A late-term abortion, that vacuum cleaner is not big enough, so then you have to do something different. I can get for you a video of a unborn child happily playing its games and tumbling in its mother's stomach. And here comes the suction curette. As soon as the child senses it's there, you can see it swim away to the far corner of the room, trying to get away, and then watch its reaction in pain and finally convulsions as its limbs are torn off, and then the rest of the child is sucked up into the vacuum cleaner. Not a pleasant sort of thing to watch. What happens with a partial birth abortion is the child is taken partially out of the womb. If it's a feet first thing, that's a problem. And generally the doctors, as I understand it, will turn the child face down. But there's this little partially delivered child with legs and arms kicking, and nurses and doctors have had to deal with the trauma of that little child reaching out and grabbing one of their fingers, as is very natural, and they have to take the scissors and stick it into the back of the kid's head and kill it. You can see in the videos the convulsions, the startle reflex that we all see in children, and then the child going into convulsions, and then they suck out the kid's brains, and it's over. On a head, and generally they turn the child face down because just the nature of the shape of the woman's body, that keeps the kid from being able to scream or cry out makes it easier for the staff there to continue with their duty. And sometimes the child will have its eyes open. Now, we all know that generally you got to wipe the mucus and stuff off the kid's eyes. But the trauma of doing that when the kid is crying out or seeing the eyes or having your fingers grasped has been too tough for lots of medical attendees. And I can sympathize that it has what. The obstetricians in the record say that there is no situation under which a partial birth abortion is the only option. You've seen in the national press, many states trying to figure out how to do capital punishment that's not cruel and unusual punishment, so that the person being executed doesn't suffer. Old Sparky, some of the electric chairs have been put in museums so that because of the very uncomfortable performance. Now there's records out there, or information about the drug-induced deaths that have been incomplete and not fast enough, and that's being reworked. What we were trying to do here with the partial birth abortion bill was to bring our laws into conformity to the federal laws, which are passed all the court tests, and stop the rare times when children are executed in this heinous way. I'm sorry to upset you. I think we all should be proud of the good work we've done here, and I don't want it to end on a sad note. But indeed, as you have done, and as the previous speaker talked about the crime bills, we have a responsibility to do things that protect people. It's one of the fundamental rights or responsibilities of government. And I would commend to you that you think deeply on these things as we work together to provide safe life for children and citizens. And thanks again, Madam President, for this remarkable experience you've had a part in putting me through, and it's been a delight in its entirety.
Thank you. Should I say thanks? Senator Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Permission to speak on thanks.
Thanks, Senator.
This is always hard for me because we have two colleagues that we know aren't coming back. Senator, I'm going to violate the rules with your permission, Senator Wilkin and Senator Cowdery. And for me, coming to Juneau and leaving behind family, leaving behind friends, leaving behind businesses in many cases, it's a concept. I'm the only one that can say that in this body. And everybody else does this. And they do it because they're committed to public service. And I just want to tell the two departing members that we consider you citizens of Juneau. Thanks for your service.
Senator Allen, I would say there are some members around the building who are trying to change that. So on to further special orders. Senator Huggins.
Thank you, Madam President. Request permission to leave the body and speak on values.
On values, Senator Huggins.
Yes. Number one, I would commend you on your values.
Thank you.
And in your values as you portray them in your leadership in this body, and I think we're the better for it. And you and I share many values, and I've watched that board. And sometimes it's been you and I voted a way that was different from the remainder of the body. I've seen multiple times when you have voted to be the only contrasting piece to the way the vote went because of your values and your convictions. That's important for us. In this body, as I recall, I've never voted on either abortion, nor have I voted on parental consent. And my good friend from Eagle River, he and I share many values in that respect on the issues he spoke of. We all come from different backgrounds. I grew up on a farm, dirt poor, in Florida. Most people think of Florida as palm trees. But in that respect, by the time I was about 7 or 8 years old, I had my values, and they've carried on. My wife, sitting right there, she and I raised 3 kids. But in the intermediate of that, one of the things that I learned from my father, who graduated from high school early to go to the South Pacific on behalf of our country, service to your country, the value of that, was instilled in him. And I carried that on. I went to Vietnam. Because 50-some thousand young men and young women didn't come back. It's tough. When I think about our kids, 3 of them, one's a lieutenant in the Army. He got those same values that I got from my mother and father and my wife's mother and father. who my father-in-law also was in the Navy in World War II. Our daughter, as many of you know, is a cadet at West Point. Not because she loves the military, because she understands that she will serve her country in some way, and it's better to just go ahead and do that. And it's hard, it's tough. She gets up at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, goes to bed about midnight. But with the values of our family. Our youngest son, Cody, he's going to join her in that same tough environment. Not because he likes the military, he understands the importance of service. What I'm going to say next, I want everyone to grasp. It applies to you, that's good. If it doesn't, that's okay too. The insinuation of any vote that I made on that board about abortion or parental consent is false. There's chivalry that comes with values. I am angry for someone to insinuate that my values in this hall were violated. Anybody wants to talk to me about values or ethics, and I don't care what you write on a sheet of paper about your ethics, how many Bibles there are about ethics, it's about your values. And I am proud of my values, and I have never, and I know there's other people here, have backed away from those, and I haven't voted in any way that reflects anything other than those values. And I apologize to you for being emotional, but I'm sad today because someone insinuates that by implication. That saddens me. And for that, I apologize for being emotional. Thank you.
Are there further special orders?
Madam President, first of all, it's that time of the year, and no need to be afraid of emotions. We've all worked very hard, and emotions run high. And so with that, as in the tradition...
Before you, Sunny Dye, I would like to remember to say just one thing very briefly. I would like to associate myself with the remarks of the former speaker, and I have yet to ever vote against any sanctity of life issue. I will continue to do that. Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Madam
President. Baby legislator, please.
Yes, Madam President, as in the tradition of this body as the youngest member of the Senate, it's my pleasure and honor, and truly pleasure and honor, to move and ask unanimous consent that the 25th Alaska Senate adjourn sine die.
We adjourn.